As our guest, Morgan is the CEO of Prevention Links in Union and the co-chair of the New Jersey Coalition for Addiction Recovery Support. She has so many great programs that she's going to share with us today. So let's take a quick listen to our sponsors, and then we can come back and hear from Morgan.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Welcome back to Sharing the Hope, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce Radio. Again, my name is Christine Yunosa with Prevention Resources. Today, we're talking to Morgan Thompson, the CEO of Prevention Links of Union. So thank you, Morgan, for taking the time to be here with us today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, about how you came about to be the CEO of Prevention Links and the coalition, and kind of some of your endeavors?
Absolutely. Well, first off, thank you so much, Christine, for having me here today. My name is Morgan Thompson. I am the CEO of Prevention Links, and I'm also a person in long-term recovery. I've been in recovery since I was 18 years old, and a big part of what we're going to talk about today is how my professional career has really aligned with my personal experiences. And so I bring a lot of passion to what I do, especially around adolescent recovery support, which is what we're going to be talking about today. So as Christine mentioned, Prevention Links is based in Union County. We're a nonprofit organization focused on substance misuse prevention, and we've been serving the Union County community for almost 50 years now. In most of that time, we were focused on primary prevention services, so school-based education, community awareness, those sorts of efforts. And in the last 10 years or so, we've really expanded our focus to include family success centers. So we have 4 family success centers throughout the region where we help families before they're in crisis to really bond, build resilience, and have opportunities to connect with one another. And then about 6 years ago now, we opened the first recovery high school in the state of New Jersey, which was a monumental task and a very important one. And from there, we've really built out our recovery support services to where, you know, we serve, you know, more than 100 individuals a year in the local community with direct recovery support services.
And that's just an amazing program, the Recover High School. So were you with that program from the beginning?
I wasn't involved in the early planning. It did take a long time to plan and implement the first school. Our CEO at the time, Pamela Capassi, was very invested in the model and overcame with the support of our board and of Senator Lesniak, who the school is named for, overcame so many hurdles to make the school a reality. And so I came on board right before we opened our doors in the fall of 2014. And at that time, I had recently graduated from Rutgers University, and I was so thrilled to be involved in such an innovative program. And my role was as a recovery mentor, so to use my lived experience of addiction and recovery to support other young people in recovery. Sorry, I'm a little too quiet. Hopefully you could hear me before. So, as I was saying, right, so my role was to be a mentor to the youth that we served at the high school. Obviously, academics are a huge piece of what we provide at the Recovery High School, but recovery support is also critical, and those services are all designed to be non-clinical. It's not a therapeutic school. We're not doing therapy during the school day, but more so just kind of being a touch point, somebody who has been there, who knows what it's like, who can talk students through the struggles that come up at, you know, any given point during the day. And I also got to build out some really exciting recovery-friendly social activities for the students. So I would take them on trips, take them to meetings in the community, self-help, really teach them how to have fun and be a young person in recovery.
That's so great. So that was in 2014 mm-hmm. as a mentor.
Yes.
In 2019, you're the CEO of Prevention Links. So
it's been a journey.
It's been a journey. That is really like quite an accomplishment, you know. And I remember when the high school was just starting out that, you know, it seemed to be that it was work to make it happen, but a passion, right? So it seemed to be a passion of yours. So you were saying that it's not really a therapeutic setting. So there's no therapy, there's no counseling, or there is counseling?
We do have clinicians on staff, and sometimes if there's unusual circumstances, if there's been some type of trauma, or maybe if the student has experienced, a relapse, we will have them meet with the counselor for a few sessions. But if it's, if they're requiring more services than that, we typically make a referral to an outside treatment provider. And most of our students, when they start with us, are in maybe an intensive outpatient program or seeing an in-home counselor or something like that. And so we're in constant communication with whoever that provider is.
So is that how are your students referred to you? Do they come from like an IOP or an outpatient, or do they just come from a school district, or
all of the above? Yes, the care management organizations and, you know, all the different service areas throughout the state can refer to us. Probation, juvenile probation will sometimes refer. We do get there are a few districts that refer to us quite a bit, and then a lot of times parents will refer, and sometimes even students will refer themselves. I've had students reach out on their website. Yeah. My friend told me about this, who I went to treatment with. I'd like to come. So
nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the best way. When they're willing, right? So there's half the battle with anything, right? So when our adolescents are willing to get help, and because they're young, you know, and it's tough when they're young, you know. Mm-hmm. So if they needed additional support, if there was a lot of other things going on, then they would probably go into a therapeutic setting. But for the substance, they would stay there. So who pays for this?
So it really depends. So for most of the time we've been open, the tuition was the responsibility of the sending district.
Of the district,
right.
Okay.
And so we would prorate the cost based on the amount of time the student was with us, because we do have ongoing enrollment throughout the school year. So they can start with us January, February, whenever.
Okay, yeah.
And some students come to us in the beginning of the year. It's rare that they transition out in the same year that they start with us. But if they are, you know, doing well and are motivated to return to their home district, we will work with them to make that happen as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they do have that option.
But
yeah.
I will say that over the last 2 years, there has been funding made available through the State Department of Education, which has covered the cost of tuition and transportation for any student wanting to
attend.
That is
amazing.
Yeah, so that's made a huge
difference. So I know for myself, with working with the Children's System of Care and, you know, working in support in those areas and going into those school board meetings when these kids need out-of-school placements, it's a fight. You know, the fight is on, and it's a shame, but yet the school boards have to watch their budget, you know, but when the kid needs support, the kid needs support. So I can imagine them blocking this from happening, and that could be a whole nother show, to go into the stigma of why substance abuse disorder could not be equivalent to a mental health challenge, you know. So, and unfortunately it's not, you know, and we know it's not. So now that you have that funding, I'm sure it opens doors for many.
Right. So when we've, in the years that we've not had that funding, when it's been up to the districts to pay, our enrollment has been, you know, 5, maybe 6 maximum. We have 17 students currently.
That's so great.
This year.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
it's a huge difference.
Right. So you take that equation away.
Right.
So does the district still run the show? Like, are you following their standards as far as so with a therapeutic setting, the child will usually go to a therapy school, and then their diploma comes from the district. Is this the same?
Yes, it
is the same. So you're still following their curriculum. They just don't have to.
So we have
that.
Our own curriculums, but we meet graduation requirements.
Their requirements. So do your students, is their goal to come to you and graduate, or is their goal to go back?
It really depends when they come to us.
Okay.
And at first, we were getting a lot of seniors, maybe some juniors, and so they were graduating with us. One year, we had six students, and they were all seniors, and they all graduated, and we started from, you know, from zero the next year. But this year, we had, I want to say, six returning students from the previous year who, you know, were sophomores and are now juniors, or juniors and now seniors. And that's really how this model works best. You know, there have been recovery high schools since the 1970s, and there's, you know, about close to 50 around the country. And what makes the model so profound, there's differences in how it's implemented in all these different places, but it's really the peer connections and the peer support that make it so effective. So when we have students coming back to us who are in stable recovery, who know the ropes, able to really lift up those new students and help them to, A, feel comfortable, but B, understand that this is an environment for people who want to be in recovery, not who have to be. You know, it really makes a huge difference in the culture. And so we see our students do much better when you know, we have that recovery community thriving.
Yeah, and it makes all the difference. I've seen for myself, I've seen working with other families, that we could put all the counselors and the therapists and everybody in place, and it's great. But when we put the kids together and they're feeding each other positive reinforcement, it makes all the difference, you know. And then, of course, there's the flip side. When you put them together and they're feeding each other negative reinforcements, that's difficult, you know, and it happens,
And I think our attempt to safeguard against that is the introduction of the recovery mentors into that peer group. So they're not, I mean, they're staff, they're trained, they're supervised, they're accountable. But at the same time, they speak candidly about their lived experience, again, in an appropriate way. They're young, they're fun, they're, you know,
relatable.
Somebody they want,
they
want to be around them. And so they have a lot of sway over how the peer group evolves and what behavior becomes the norm and what doesn't.
That makes a big difference. So are you looking at, like, 12-step work there, or
not
do you have
so
a model? Or
so we embrace all pathways to recovery.
Oh,
so some
goodness.
Of our students, you know, do go to 12-step meetings. Some prefer, like, smart recovery meetings. We try to introduce them to different types of recovery models so that they can find what works for them. So we'll do, you know, we have, you know, a smart recovery facilitator come in and do a, you know, do a group with them. We have speakers come in from the 12-step community and share their stories. And we really just want them to find what's going to support them best. But at the same time, you know, if a student is, you know, continuing to have difficulty with relapse or behaviors, we really have a frank conversation with them about, okay, this is what you like to support you in your recovery, but is this helping you?
Is this helping, getting
you to your goals? And so, again, the mentors are instrumental. And, you know, in some cases, we'll meet them in the community at a meeting, at a 12-step meeting. If they're uncomfortable, they're involved, so they know which meetings have more younger people. So that's all very important.
So what happens if there is a relapse?
So it's all very case by case. It does happen. I think that's just a part of the, it's a part of recovery, but it's also part of the adolescent recovery trajectory, even more so. So we do drug test weekly. Most of the time, if a student has used, they will tell us prior to the drug test. And so that's all the different things we take into consideration. Did they disclose? What were the circumstances? What was the duration of abstinence prior? You know, and what supports were they utilizing? And so in most cases, we handle it, you know, in-house in as much as we can. If there's any type of threat to the community, if, you know, there's anything that, you know, glamorizing and different behaviors that might be a problem, then we might, you know, have some other types of interventions. But unless the student is needing inpatient treatment, you know, in those cases, we will require that as a condition of enrollment, that they need to go back to treatment and come back to us. And again, that's happening less and less as our program evolves and becomes more robust and successful.
Yeah, what a great program. It's so needed. So let's take a quick minute to listen to our sponsors and come back and hear some more of your programs and what's going on. I just love hearing about the Recover High School. I mean, our kids need it. You know, there's so many of our kids that need it, and once they jump on board, I think, and get with each other, then, you know, it's not a stigma. It's probably cool, you know. So so let's take a quick listen to some of our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
So welcome back to Sharing the Hope. I'm your host, Christine Unoso, from the Family Support Center at Prevention Resources. So other than just supporting our families on a one-on-one basis or on the phone, we do have family support meetings. So in Somerset, our family support meetings meet in Somerville on the second and the fourth Friday of the month. And in Hunterdon, our meetings meet on the first and the third Wednesday at 6:30 of the month. So this is just a great opportunity for our families to just share with each other. You know, so many times we're struggling and we feel alone, you know. So when our loved ones, whether they're adolescents or, you know, they're young adults or older adults, are going through the horrors of this substance abuse disorder, the families don't know what to do, you know. And it's just so great that we can, you know, help each other to get through that, you know. So some of the families that I'm working with a young woman whose brother is struggling, you know. We're working with a grandmother. So it doesn't have to be a parent, you know, and it doesn't have to be an adolescent. So the support, you know, support is always there. We are speaking with Morgan Thompson, the CEO of Prevention Links and co-chair of New Jersey Coalition in Addiction Recovery Support. And we were just talking about the Recovery High School, so we were just going to touch a little bit about that and then hear some more of your great programs. You know, so when we left, I was thinking, right, real quick, that what about the parents' involvement? So here I am, a support person for parents, and I worked with parents at the Children's System of Care. So how are the parents being supported?
Right. So Oh, sorry. I thought you asked something different. So basically, we really encourage family involvement from the outset. We want them to be, involved from the point of the referral. We always have a conversation with the parent or guardian before the student comes in, kind of get their perspective. A lot of times we have families come in where the student may not be ready for a recovery high school setting and also might not be willing yet to go to treatment. And a lot of times we become a support to those parents as well.
Okay.
While the student is with us, we're in contact with the parents typically, every 1 to 2 weeks. We want to get in the habit, and what we really have successfully gotten in the habit of doing is letting them hear from us not just when there's a problem, right? Yeah. So, and we can do that because we're so small and the student-to-staff ratio is intentionally low. We're very grateful to be a partner with Prevention Resources in the Family Support Center for the Central Region, and so we actually cover Union, Middlesex, and Monmouth counties for the same services that Prevention Resources provides that Christine just spoke about. And so we do have a parent support group that we encourage all of our families to attend, along with other families from the community.
Mm-hmm. So your support coordinator then will link up with those families that need support from the adolescents at the high school.
If it's
appropriate, yeah.
But they're
also
hearing from our transition coordinator, who's the counselor on site, as well as our mentors with kind of the day-to-day information.
Which is so great. I mean, so many parents are just lost. You know, there's no handbook, right? Where's the handbook? You know, your kid is struggling. There's a lot going on, and we're searching for answers, you know, and then there's the stigma, you know, and that's just a struggle all in itself because you're not sharing necessarily with your neighbors or, you know, even your family members, your sister. Sometimes this is kind of hidden under the carpet, so it lends to that isolation, you know, so helping those parents is just really important. So what was the other mentor program? Was it a mentor program you wanted to talk about? Or?
Sure, yeah. So first I just want to say, I mentioned that it was a struggle to open the first school, but once we broke that ground, it really laid a foundation for other schools to open in the state. So there's Keys Academy in Monmouth County and Coastal Prep Academy in Cape May County, and so students around the state do now have access to recovery high schools. And our school, the Raymond J. Lesniak Experience Strength and Hope Recovery High School, serves the entire northern region, so we would accept a student from Hunterdon County. And again, that would be paid through our grant. The tuition would be covered, and a van would transport them from their home to the school and back. That's a great resource that, you never know who's going to need it. So please, anyone listening, feel free to share that information with anyone you think might benefit. So something else that we noticed very quickly when we started with our students is that we gave them this great program during the day, but they still had the challenges going home at night and on the weekends because we're not a residential program.
Right.
And we're not designed to be. Not having a safe, supportive place to be, even if home was safe, but, wanting to be out with peers, having fun.
Going back in that setting again. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to fill that gap. So a few years ago, we applied for a grant through the federal government that allowed us to open a recovery community center designed for youth and emerging adults. And so that center is located in the same building as the Recovery High School. So it's open to our students as well as other young people who are maybe slightly older, who aren't in high school anymore, have graduated. And we also started offering a GED high school equivalency through that program. So it's based off of the alternative peer group model. So I just want to, put it into context a little bit. 9 out of 10 people who develop a substance use disorder begin using as a teenager, before the age of 18. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of attention right now on the opioid epidemic, of course, but what we're seeing is that with our adolescents who are certainly at high risk for developing an opioid use disorder, most of them are actually in need of treatment for other substances.
Yeah.
And so here in New Jersey in 2017, for example, the data showed that 95% of treatment admissions for the under 18 age group were for alcohol and marijuana. So, a lot of the programs that are available are either not available for youth or they're only available for, individuals with an opioid use disorder. So we were really excited to bring this model to the state especially because we keep seeing that adolescent treatment programs aren't being utilized. A lot of young people aren't being referred. They're not being identified. And when they are identified, the points of entry into treatment are really problem-focused and stigmatizing. It's usually related to, you know, some sort of justice involvement, difficulty
behavioral,
at school, behavioral issues. And so we really wanted to make recovery attractive for young people and make it exciting and fun. And so at the center, we have our mentors. Again, they're young, they're fun, they're, you know, relatable. And so they're offering first self-help groups that are really focused on the young adult population. We have various social activities throughout the week. So we'll do, you know, trips to the, you know, hiking or to the beach. And then we also do some in-house activities, like we did a coffee and canvas night, kind of like a paint and sip.
Nice.
No Pinot.
These are people from the high school? No, you said it's open to the community.
Yeah,
okay.
Open
so
to the community.
It would be pretty much for those with a substance abuse disorder or who are experimenting or?
It's really designed for people
open.
In recovery.
Oh, it's
yes.
designed for people
in recovery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And their families. We do have some family programming
okay.
as
uh-huh.
well.
Yeah.
And so in addition to the social piece and, you know, the recreation and the self-help, we do some case management, peer recovery support, and really a lot of kind of being the center of communication with all the different people who are involved in somebody's recovery process, whether that's probation, family,
yeah.
treatment provider. We're kind of that hub.
It sounds like it's all about empowering them instead of punishing them. You know,
exactly.
What a big difference, right? So we're not sentenced to IOP or we're not sentenced to this 16-week or 12-week or whatever it is that, you know, we're encouraged or empowered almost to go and get involved. And so you were mentioning that some of the treatment centers were you saying they're underutilized or?
Underutilized. In the last 4 years, I believe it's either 4 or 5, one of the state funded adolescent treatment programs has closed every year. So we've lost.
Really? So,
yeah.
So meaning like an intensive outpatient or a partial?
Residential.
Hospital? Oh, residential.
Residential
yeah.
programs.
So residentials are closing. Is that because they're underutilized or because they're not? I had understood that the state no longer wants to. It's all about not letting perform care. You know, the hoops that they jump through to get these kids in a residential is crazy. So they're not really encouraging it at all.
Right. And I think that, you know, we have clear criteria, right, about through the American Society of Addiction Medicine when there's a need for an adolescent to be in a residential setting. It is within the philosophy of the children's system of care overall to, you know, keep young people in the home in as much as possible,
right.
Which is fantastic. But I think the children's system of care also acknowledges that there's, obviously I can't speak for them, but that,
yeah.
you know, there's criteria, and if those criteria are being met, you know, that the youth would be referred to a residential setting. But I think it's more to do with, first of all, like not having the right channels in place to identify youth who would benefit from that
identifying
them in time, because we know the adult system is completely overwhelmed. You could wait 2, 3, 4
absolutely.
Weeks.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, but, you know, a lot of times when they were 16, 17, there was an opportunity to intervene that just was missed.
That was missed,
right.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And it seems like I think the children's system of care, or at least care management, would be the only governors of placing someone in a residential where it would be covered. Other than that, the families are paying.
Or using their private insurance, you know,
sometimes.
If
they,
yeah.
That's a whole other topic.
Right, and it's, you know, I think it's very beneficial and advisable to go through the children's system of care because they do get access to all these other
and
resources.
And they get care management, and,
right.
yeah, and the family gets support, and yeah.
Right.
yeah it
and
is a good, it's a great program, yeah.
And our model with the alternative peer group or the recovery center is really designed to plug right into that model. So,
okay.
we, you know, we have youth receiving treatment through in-home therapists, but there's not necessarily that group component or really connection to a bigger community. And so for a youth who's, you know, in recovery from a substance use disorder, who's getting in-home treatment, to come to the recovery center 2 or 3 days a week could be hugely beneficial.
Yes,
it can make a huge
right.
impact
of
in their
course,
recovery outcomes.
Of course, and be around others. So how much is that used? Is it pretty busy, the center? Or?
It could be a lot busier, yeah.
Okay.
I would say it's underutilized.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just probably getting the word out.
Exactly.
Yeah, 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 just encouraging, yeah. Okay. Great programs, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, and so, you know, I think just creating programming for youth that's more appealing, more attractive, and that is going to be more likely to engage them. You know, for example, this is the norm in Texas. Their outpatient programs all have these components of the alternative peer group model. And they have much higher abstinence rates, recovery outcomes for their youth who participate than, you know, the national average, right? So we see like between a 50 and 90% relapse rate among adolescents who receive treatment nationally.
Okay.
Whereas the Houston, Texas alternative peer groups see a success rate of like 90% consistently year
wow.
after year. Especially those who
so
are
So they
both,
are the people to watch.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Okay.
Especially if they're in a recovery high school and an alternative peer group. That's like the magic combination.
Okay, yeah, so that all works together. And is this something that's kind of big in that area, the recovery high schools and... So the recovery high schools that we have two more in New Jersey. Are they all funded the same way? They kind of follow the same path? Okay, great. Good. So let's take a quick minute to go to our sponsors, and then we'll be back to talk a little bit more.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
So welcome back to Sharing the Hope. I'm Christine Unoso, your host, and we're here with Morgan Thompson, our CEO from Prevention Links, and we've just had a great conversation about Recovery High School and things that are going on there. There's so many great programs that Morgan has been heading up and taking leadership role in your young life. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Like what is your journey? How did you get here?
Okay. Well, I guess, I could share a little bit about, my recovery journey. I was someone who started using alcohol and marijuana pretty young, 13, 14 years old, and not your typical candidate for, that type of behavior. I was, very smart, did very well in school, teacher's pet type, two-parent family, and then some. My grandparents lived with me. I had a lot of love and support around me. No kind of difficulties around, not having enough money or anything like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was always a very sensitive person. I took things very, to heart. And when bad things happened, it impacted me profoundly. And so I think a big piece of my early use, and I think this is true for a lot of young people, was related to depression, anxiety, maybe not clinical at that time, but that I didn't know how to cope with effectively. And so, you know, I turned to alcohol, you know, taking it out of the pantry, and, you know, and it wasn't a party. It wasn't fun for me. It was very much about coping very early on.
So self-medicating.
Right. 100%. 100%. And not really feeling like there was anyone I could turn to, because I didn't want to disappoint my family. I didn't want to disappoint my teachers, because they, you know, they thought I was this star student. So the pressure of having to be that perfect child, not that anyone was really putting it on me, but just perceived,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
There was no real opportunity for me to, you know, talk about what I was doing or what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
And then it started to become a little more, I started to have more consequences. I started to kind of change my peer group, older students who were, using other types of drugs, staying out late, not coming home. My grades started to slip.
And now what is parents doing?
My parents had a great idea. They decided that we should move. So I grew up in Middlesex County, and they thought that the thing to do
it was the environment.
It was the environment, so let's move to the rolling hills of Hunterdon County.
There's the solution.
Yes. And very well intended, again.
Of course,
And I think a lot of parents think that, you know, that changing the environment, changing the circumstances can help. But, at that point, I was kind of deep in it. I hate to break it to whoever, but, you know, drugs are everywhere. So, you know, even in a community like this that's extremely affluent and, you know, there's a lot of great resources and supports, I still found the negative.
Yes. There's no discriminating. Yeah. Exactly. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I did manage to get through high school. I graduated from North Hunterdon, and I was accepted to Rutgers, went there. But somewhere in between graduating high school and starting at Rutgers, I had started to use drugs that, when I didn't take them, I became very ill.
Okay.
Let's put it that way. And so, you know, I wasn't really able to support my habit, right, the way I had. I wasn't able to work 12 hours a day as a waitress to make money to go to, you know, to not be sick and continue to go to school and, you know, be a college student. And so I actually dropped out of Rutgers within the first month that I was there.
Okay.
Moved home, continued to just dive deeper and deeper. And, you know, tried to go to community college here at RVCC. I would go, I would fall asleep, I would just kind of nod out in class, and eventually stop going again. And obviously my parents were extremely concerned.
Yeah, I'm sure. They don't know what to do.
Right.
They don't know
what to do. Yeah. Where to turn. Mm-hmm. And nobody was really talking about this at the time, so it was even more stigmatized, especially for my age. And so, you know, one day...
You didn't meet the stereotype.
Exactly.
You didn't meet that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, one day my parents just kind of had this very intense conversation with me, and... You know, I'm the oldest of four. My youngest sibling at the time was, I think, 1 or 2 years old, and I adored him. And they just kind of said, you're 18. There's not going to be any more financial support. You're not going to be welcome here because we don't want you, you know, having this negative influence on your siblings, bringing God knows who in the house, which is what I was doing. And so, you know, I kind of had a moment where that conversation coincided with me just being really, really tired of what I was doing, and scared that it could get worse. And so I did accept their offer of treatment. I wasn't sure that they were going to let me in to the treatment program because I thought they were going to say, are you kidding? You're 18 years old. You don't have a drug problem. Like, go home. You know,
not
stop whining.
Not the case,
but, yeah. So they took me. And
you're not unique. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I found out. And, you know, I learned that, you know, because I didn't know this at the time, but, you know, obviously my treatment experience is very different than many people have because I was still on my parents' insurance. And so I was able to go to, you know, detox, rehab, outpatient, and get all of those supports. But I think what really made the difference for me in being able to sustain recovery as a young person is that immediately after treatment, I went back to Rutgers, and at Rutgers they have
one of the oldest recovery housing programs
for students. I moved in there a year where they had like 25 students, which was like the most they'd ever had.
And you're all supporting each other.
Exactly.
Yes, nice.
And not just supporting in like the recovery sense, and but like having fun.
Having fun together.
Going to the gym, going to the library and studying, you know, like being real students, having a real experience, having fun, but also, you know, holding each other accountable and being serious.
Right. Because I'm sure a lot of college students are thinking, I should be partying. I should be. And then you get the, I'm left out. I'm, you know, I'm not part of. And so that's great that they have that. Yeah. And they're one of the only, or?
There's so many more now than there
were. Oh, there are. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So they were one of the first. They're the longest running. So they've been around since the 80s. But there's, I think it's the number is, this isn't exactly my area of expertise, but I think there's close to 100 now.
Oh.
There was a real push around the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now in New Jersey, there's a program at Montclair State. There's one at the College of New Jersey. Some of the community colleges are even having
their
maybe
own,
not housing, but they have, you know, a community center for people in recovery. So, you know, it's really expanded, and those efforts have been supported by the state Department of Human Services and, you know, have really been able to flourish. And now it's great because I get to connect those to the program that I oversee with the Recovery High School, as well as, you know, my connections with the recovery house at Rutgers. You know, I get some of my best hires from there for my recovery mentors.
Okay, uh-huh.
We get lots of volunteers.
For your mentors, yeah, nice.
Yep, so we have a really great connection with them, and we can bring our students to the recovery activities at Rutgers and say, like, hey, you know, this could be you. You could go here.
You know,
you could be a part of this community. It doesn't end after high school.
And it looks attractive.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's nice that your parents were there and, you know, you were ready, which is so important. But, you know, something I learned, you know, just as a parent, as working with other parents, is that, you know, that opportunity you have to almost wait for, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I was working with the Children's System of Care, I became a Nurtured Heart trainer. And Nurtured Heart is all about that positive reinforcement, build up that positive, build, and, you know, kind of like lower the negative, which is a lot of what the CRAFT model, which is what we're working with now with parents, which is a community-based model about positive reinforcement, you know. It's tough to be a parent, you know, and struggle with these kinds of issues and not want to put your kid to the curb. But then there's a lot of parents who are like, I will never put my kid to the curb. And then they feel bad about it, like they're bad people because they're enabling. And you know, that whole word enabling, we're just trying to, like, play that down. Like, we're not enabling, you know. These are our kids, and we're trying to help them. And, you know, sit back and wait for the right moment when they're willing. Sometimes it's really hard to wait for it, but it seems like they were able to, you know, to grab that. And that's when you were able to then go, you know. I know I've seen with other families, I've seen with myself, you know, like, let's move, right, or let's change the friend group. That's the problem, is the friend group. I found out later that, yeah, my son was the instigator, right? But you know what I mean? So you think that change the friend group, change the environment, you know, and sometimes it's just not the answer, you know. So that was great, though. And you have a good relationship with your family now.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful,
yeah,
relationship. Uh-huh. I got married a couple of buildings down here from here at City Hall a couple years ago, and we could have gotten our own place, but we just said we want to be home. We want to be with the family. We want to be with my parents, my grandparents, my brothers. My sister's not doesn't live with us anymore, but you know, we're
okay.
One big
nice.
Happy family.
Very nice. Yeah, you don't hear that often,
no.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So let's take a brief minute to listen to one of our sponsors, and then we'll jump back in a moment.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
So welcome back to Sharing the Hope Radio. My name is Christine Enoso, and I'm still your host, and we are still here with Morgan Thompson listening to some great programs, and we've got a lot of information. You know, our kids are so important, and there's so, you know, there's so much that, you know, that they need, you know, that I think that today is different. You know, today is different than when we grew up, and whether it's not that it didn't exist, but it's at a whole new level, you know. So we talked about, like, the attractiveness of some of these programs and the college programs, the community center. So what kind of other outreach are you doing to get the kids involved, to kind of bring them in?
So for a lot of youth, transportation is a barrier, so we'll actually bring our programming one night a week to different places, you know, and that's something that we, you know, we try to find an area where there's maybe an outpatient program with adolescents. But I think that, you know, we've done, you know, a ton of outreach around social media, you know, meeting kids where they are, meeting parents where they are,
yeah.
You know, to drive referrals. But when we use a term like recovery, it's challenging when a youth doesn't and a parent doesn't necessarily identify that as the need that the young person has, right? I think a lot of times it may seem like it's more of a mental health concern or whatever it might be.
Or they'd rather it be. Sometimes they'd rather it be.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And that goes both ways, interestingly enough.
Yeah, that's true. Ways, that's very true. Yeah.
But overall, and I think I've kind of, you know, alluded to this before, we need to do a better job of educating. We need to do a better job of creating opportunities to have the conversation, to assess risk, and to, you know, give youth an opportunity to ask for help. Because I don't know, maybe if somebody had asked me, maybe if somebody had had a conversation with me when I was 13, 14 years old,
yeah,
I would have had a shorter trajectory and, you know, my use would have been different and the consequences of my use would have been different. So, you know, I love to share about an example. In the state of Massachusetts, they've implemented a model in all of the public schools called ESPERT, and that stands for Screening, Brief Intervention, and Referral to Treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it involves a brief conversation, a screening. Like, I remember when I was in high school, I got screened for scoliosis, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All the students did. And that's the idea. It's universal. Every single student has a 5 to 10 minute conversation with a substance abuse professional in the school setting, and they assess their risk. They ask a number of questions, pretty non-invasive questions too, and it's really designed to just determine if the student is engaging in behaviors that are putting them at risk, using motivational interviewing skills, perhaps meeting 2 or 3 times in school with the student to, you know, just provide some education and reinforce healthy behaviors. And then if there is, of course, a need for treatment, facilitating that referral. And so it's the best model I've seen to really be comprehensive, to ensure that, you know, all students have an opportunity to, you know where they stand and what their risk is. and also to have a trusted person that they know they can go to within the school if later on they feel like they need somebody to talk to who's yeah. not going to judge them, who's not going to stigmatize them, who they're not going to be in trouble for saying that they have, you know, been using drugs, right? And so I think that's a great model. And not only do we see more youth who need help getting help in those situations in Massachusetts in that program, they also see that overall age of onset of use is decreased by like a year, right?
So just by talking to them.
Just by talking
to the kids, you know. I think it's so amazing that just sitting down, there was a lot of studies that came out about trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Trauma-induced. And what is trauma? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think trauma is like a serious incident. And you know, trauma can be over a period of time. Trauma can just be your life situation, you know, mm-hmm. and how just talking to somebody and finding that out, because that can change everything, you know, that can change where the direction you're going in, you know, without being addressed, you know, and developing those relationships. A lot of times I think, you know, our counselors, our schools, parents, you know, it's just, we're going to reprimand, you got to do the right thing, we're going to, you know, these are the rules, blah, 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 without saying, and how do you feel about it? You know, what are you feeling? You know, it's just that kind of in-depth conversation just to bring stuff out. And I think a lot of our kids will close down initially. So you have to develop that relationship, get them to open up. But when they do and have that trusted person, it makes a big difference. Yeah.
Huge difference.
It's a huge difference, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that really hasn't been implemented much at all in the state of New Jersey, at least not in a school-based setting.
No.
So there's a lot of opportunity, I think, to, you know, increase awareness through something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that we'll start to see that model make its way
that
into
would
New
be,
Jersey.
Yeah, that would be great. And you know, that model as well as, you know, as I'm working with the Nurture Heart program, now they're starting to train staff at schools with the Nurture Heart program, and that's almost the same concept. Mm-hmm. Let's stop and talk, you know. Let's bring the positive out on our kids. And you know, there's been several programs where they've gone in and they've trained the whole staff, you know, and then they sit back and they go and witness in the classroom, you know, and see the difference, you know. And it's amazing. It's empowering the teachers, you know. And I know when you go through that initial Nurtured Heart training, like, you want to be great, right? You just want to have the greatness that they talk about, you know, and it's about building up your child's greatness and your own greatness, you know. So to keep reinforcing programs like that, that will make a big difference with our kids, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of challenges that our kids deal with early on that are leading up to, you know. Like you were even saying, like early on, right, if somebody had stopped to listen.
Right.
Or you were able to talk, right? You
right.
know? You had great family, but you weren't able to share, right? So we have to drag it out, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Create environments where the conversation can be had.
Too, yeah, exactly. Know. The trust is there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think there's also a lot of education that needs to be done on the professional side. You know, I can remember seeing mental health professionals and them really not picking up on any of it. You know, I would almost...
Dismissing things.
Dismissing.
Yes, yes.
Almost kind of encouraging, like that's what people your age do,
oh,
that kind
okay.
of thing.
Yeah,
uh-huh. So a lot of misinformation there and missed opportunities, right? There are a lot of great therapists and doctors who just aren't aware of the resources, one, don't take the time to ask. So, you know, pediatricians, I think, could do a lot to, you know, bring this information to families.
Yeah, yeah. It's about educating all of the medical staff and medical field, you know. And that's necessary with anything when it comes to substance abuse. I mean, there's a lot of change, but there's still a lot that needs to be done, you know, that needs to be done now. So at Prevention Links, we talked a lot about adolescent programs in high schools. What are you doing things for adults? Like, what else are we doing at Prevention Links?
We do. So we have one program. It's called CLEAR, Community Law Enforcement Addiction Recovery Program. And it's really designed, it's twofold. So one is on-demand treatment. If you need help with your addiction, you can walk into a number of locations or call into our hotline, and you'll be connected with a peer recovery specialist who will get you into treatment either immediately or within the next couple of days. Obviously, there's challenges around
insurance. Yeah, there's a lot of challenges, right? That's almost like impossible.
Well,
yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
It is.
Yeah.
But when you have, you know, a point of contact that knows the system,
that knows the system,
all the different places to call. And I think it's even better, you know, because what people are told when they call treatment centers a lot of the time is, okay, so we don't have a an appointment available for 2 weeks, but if you call us every day at 8 o'clock in the morning, who knows, maybe someone left early or whatever else, you know, we'll let you know. They're not going to do that, so we do it for them.
Right.
We
because call, that moment of clarity is there, and it's not. You know, they're changing their mind. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
or they're just sleeping in because they were using last night.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. Yeah,
and a lot of times we are able to connect someone a couple days after the fact because we're there. We're up bright and early to make that call.
Yeah,
so,
and
we have some peer recovery support services for adults as well.
Yeah, so that's great. That's great. That's what we need. So. Tell us real quick how we can, how our parents, how our families, how can we get in touch with you? How can, you know, is there a website? Is there phone numbers?
Sure. So our website is www.preventionlinks.org. That's LINKS.org. And our phone number is 732-381-4100. We can get you connected with any of our programs that I mentioned today, or if you want to learn more about the different programs we have, you can feel free to check out our website. We do have our annual Recovery Film Festival happening on June 1st. That's going to be at Middlesex County College, so that's a great event that's coming up, and we'd love to have you. You could also follow us on Facebook at Prevention Links. We're also on Twitter and Instagram.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Morgan. There was so much great information. We just really enjoyed having you here. And of course, you can go to our website, Sharing the Hope. And if you like our page, if you like what's going on, then we can reach so many more people and share the hope with them. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Christine.
You're welcome.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump says the United States is fully behind the people of Venezuela.
People are starving. They have no food. They have no water. And this was once one of the wealthiest countries in the world. So we wish them well. We'll be there to help.
President Trump speaking at the White House. The president also condemned the brutal regime of President Nicolas Maduro. Without proof, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is accusing Attorney General William Barr of lying to lawmakers about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's final report.
As the Attorney General of the United States of America was not telling the truth to the Congress of the United States, that's a crime.
Pelosi also believes the Attorney General is more loyal to President Trump than he is to the American people. And President Trump said that Stephen Moore has withdrawn his name from being considered as a nominee for the Fed Reserve Board. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
The Dampier Law Firm, PC 55 North Section Street, Fairhope, Alabama, is responsible for this advertisement. No representation is made that the quality of the legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of legal services performed by other lawyers. Attention all active or retired military. If you are diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss after using yellow and black or yellow and olive dual-ended earplugs, you may be entitled to significant cash compensation. These earplugs permitted damaging sounds to enter the ear canal. If you served in the military and were later diagnosed with hearing loss or tinnitus, call 800-401-7804 right now to see if you qualify for significant cash compensation. The manufacturer knew of the defect but did not warn its customers. Complaints allege that the manufacturer manipulated test results to make it appear that the plugs met government standards. If you deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan anytime from 2003 through 2015 and are now suffering from diagnosed hearing loss or tinnitus, you may be entitled to significant cash compensation. Call 800-401-7804 right now. Hurry, time is limited. Call 800-401-7804.
USA USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Attorney General Bill Barr is before a Senate committee at this hour discussing his handling of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's final report on the Russia investigation. Democrats saying that Barr mischaracterized the conclusions when he delivered